Because I don't know whether I can.
This is Barry Tyker from the University of Wisconsin Oral History Project. Today is June 1st, 1990. I'm in the apartment of Ms. Catherine Parkinson at 2020 University Avenue. And Ms. Parkinson was a student at the university from 1910 to 1914. Let's begin, Mrs. Parkinson, by
Miss.
You. Miss Parkinson, excuse me. Let's begin, Ms. Parkinson, by telling us when you were born, where you were born, and a little bit about your early schooling.
Well, I was born in 1891, and I was born in Columbus, Wisconsin, where my grandmother was living, and my mother and father were living in Madison, and I was born, I don't know whether it was the first year or the second year, I think it was the second year, and my grandmother, her mother, insisted that I be born in Columbus, where she was. So my mother went there, and I was born there, and baptized in the Congregational Church in Columbus, and left Columbus 2 weeks after I was born for Madison, and I've lived in Madison all the rest of my life, with the exception of 3 years, which I worked in New York City.
How many other, how many brothers and sisters did you have?
I had I had two sisters, Helen Parkinson Levis, Mrs. George Levis. She is deceased. Her husband was a Wisconsin graduate and a wonderful basketball champion player on the champion basketball team for 4 years, and they won the championship for 3 years. And Meanwell was the coach, and George was captain of the team, I think, 1 or 2 years. And they won, I think they won 3 years, were champions, either 2 or 3 years of the 4 that he was in college. And my other sister was Mary Parkinson Rehfeld, Rehfeld. And she graduated from the university, and so did my sister. The other sister, Mrs. Levis, both graduated. And Helen, the older one, I graduated in 1914, and she and her husband both came to Wisconsin and entered Wisconsin in 14, and they graduated in 18. And my next sister, Mary, came in 18 and graduated in 22. There were 4 years apart.
Well, Parkinson pretty much in the university for every
and
year.
And Helen and her husband both graduated from the university, and Mary graduated, but Mary's husband did not graduate. He went 1 year and then he went into business. And he was a Milwaukee man, but she finished. And she worked for a year or so after she graduated, and I don't think she went with him in college, and but she married him, she met him, and she after she finished school, she worked had a job in Milwaukee, and there she met him again, and they went together, and then they were married, and he died. I don't know how many years ago, 10 or more years ago. She's been a bit of a widow. And my sister Mary died 3 years ago, and my sister Helen died about a year and a half ago. Mm. So I'm the last of my family. And I had two brothers. One brother died when he was 9 years old of ruptured appendicitis. They didn't know much about that operation. He died on the operating table. Never been sick in his life before. And that was a very big shock to my mother. And he was a darling, very cute fellow. Loved baseball and had a lot of friends and everything and very much alive. And he fell down. He and his friend went down to the university library, historical library, to see something. And he stumbled and fell down the marble steps, I don't know how many of them, on his side, and it developed appendicitis from that fall, and he died. My other brother died, he lived to be oh, 60-odd years old. He's married and lived here in Madison. And so I had the two brothers and the two sisters.
Now when you, where did you go to school? Describe your elementary, was what kind of
school? Elementary
school,
Madison, Washington Public School, Madison High School. That was downtown where the,
MATC, is that the old
central? Yeah, right
central?
Down, you know, block off the square.
Right.
And then I went to university. 5 years. I went 4 years and graduated from the music school, and then I came back and took a year in public school music. So I attended the university 5 years. The 4 years is I got letters in science,
mm-hmm.
but I had some music. I was taking vocal lessons and piano lessons and. A lot of music, and I thought first I would do something with the music, but I never did very much with it. But I love it. I love music, and but I did go back and take some courses in public to teach music in the public schools, and I got a certificate, I guess, or something. And I did it in 1 year because I'd had so much of the music, the harmony and the counterpoint and all that. I'd had, you know. So it didn't take me long to get that 2 year course in 1 year, and that's what I did.
Now, when you took music courses, were they part of the university curriculum, or did you have to pay for them separately, or how did that work?
Well, I had to pay for so much a semester. I don't know how much it was. And of course, I had to pay for my vocal lessons.
Right, that's what I was meant.
Yes, they were part of the university. They were part of the music school.
What I meant is, did you have to pay the teachers, music teachers, separately from your tuition?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Do you remember any of your teachers in particular?
Huh. Seems like it's Bergman, but I can't remember if that's right. Bergman.
I'm going to put this on pause. So you thought her name was...
I thought it was Bergman, but I don't know why. I just said the Bergman came right out.
Well, we can maybe track her down. What can you remember about her?
Oh, nothing special. She was very pleasant and had a very good voice, and she was very good. But I got discouraged because I didn't have the strength to do what I wanted to do with my voice. She was so strong and could hold the notes, you know, and I said, oh, I can't go pump up that hill and come and have a vocal lesson after I've gone up that hill. I would be just out of breath almost when I'd come in there. I didn't have the strength to sing. I really didn't.
Now, what
I think that's one reason I gave it up, but I liked her. I thought she was good and everything, but I couldn't do the things that I wanted to do with my voice. And I didn't feel that I had the strength. Not and go to the university. Maybe if I hadn't done that, I would have felt it. But it took a lot of strength to go up and down the hill a lot, you know.
Were your classes up in Bascom Hall?
Yes, mostly in Bascom. And I lived on Langdon Street, so I had quite a long ways from Langdon down to the university, and then climb the hill and. Then do it in the afternoon and do it in the morning, and oh, it was just too much.
And do it in winter, too.
But she was, I would call a very, very nice person. She wasn't there very long. She was there all the time I was there. But some of them stayed a long time. Now, that Miss Regan, I didn't know she taught. I thought she had kind of an executive job or something. I don't know. But she was a pianist, and then there was a woman that was very good as a pianist. But I didn't have any of those people.
So you were in voice mainly. Mm-hmm. What kind of background had you had in
music? I had to take 2 years of harmony, advanced harmony, and counterpoint, and all those things. And I don't remember my teachers in any of those. That was difficult. And I know I had to spend a lot of time on that. Took a long time to do some of those things.
What had you had, when did your interest in music start? How did it develop and lead to your
life? My mother was a singer. My mother's sister was a singer. I'll show you their pictures. They had beautiful voices. And I loved music. And right from the start, when I was only 2 or 3 years old, my mother lived on State Street when I was a youngster. And my grandfather lived on the corner of State and Murray Street, where the University Club is. That was the location of his home. And she took me over there every Sunday. And I was full of music and loved music. And they got me to perform. And my mother would I wouldn't enter the living room where they all were until I bowed and said, "How do you?" And I'd pick up my little dress or skirt and I'd bow way down and say, "How do you?" And they kept me doing it for everybody that in the room because they thought it was so cute. And then they'd say, "Well, can you dance for us?" Yes. My mother would go into the room on the other side of the house where they had a big grand piano, and she played the piano and sang. And she played these different rhythms, and I'd pick up my skirt and dance, you know, and then she'd stop and change the rhythm. I'd stop and change my dance. Well, they got such a kick out of me because I was performing all the time. And I did that every Sunday when I was about 3 years old. So I was full of music. The minute she played the piano, my feet would start going. And they kept it up. So I knew that I liked music. And I just was interested in music, and I always thought I could do something with it, but I didn't do it. I did office work. Oh dear, I don't know. So that was when I was 3 years old. So my connection with my grandfather started real young. Then 2 years later, my brother came, but none of the rest of them did any of the things that I did. They didn't seem to have the music in them mm-hmm. that I did. And my mother and her sister sang duets, and every Christmas or holiday, whenever my grandparents came over for dinner or supper or anything, and the rest of the family got together. My grandfather had eight children. Five boys. Is it three girls? Three girls and five boys. Mm. And the one boy died when he entered college, and then a girl, the first girl next to my father was the oldest son, and he was Marshall, and then there were Marshall, John, Ben, Henry, Stanley. Those are the five boys, and then there was Mary. And Mary graduated from college and university, taught at Madison High School for a year or two, and then was married 1 year and had a child and died. The baby lived and she died, so that was a very tragic thing. Lovely person, I guess, because everybody seems to talk about her. And one daughter was a cripple, couldn't go to college. She's the only one that didn't go to college. And of course, Stanley, the youngest son, died. I think he was accidentally shot. He was hunting, duck hunting or something in a boat. And I've forgotten just what it was, but I think he was accidentally shot. So he died young, and Mary died the first year she was married, and the baby lived. And my grandmother was wonderful. She told her husband to bring the child to her, and she would bring it up. She brought up eight children, and she was ready to bring up her daughter's baby. And everybody thought it was so wonderful of her because she lived a very active life and entertained and did a lot for the university with teas and things like that, you know, my grandfather. would have her entertained a lot. And to have 8 children and now another one at her age. Mm-hmm. And she took this baby at birth, and the husband went back to New York. He was a lawyer. And, he was just crushed. And they were living in Salt Lake City, and everything was wonderful till this happened. And so then he left the baby. He didn't know what to do with the baby. And my grandmother said she'd take her. And she only lived 8.5 years, and that was another tragedy. After she had taken the child, she died of appendicitis, and my brother died of appendicitis the same year with appendicitis. Mm-hmm. And they knew very little about appendicitis at that time. And we had the best surgeon in Madison, Dr. What's his name?
Evans, isn't it? Or who was there?
I think he's dead now, but he had several brothers, and they were all doctors in this hospital. Oh dear, I can't.
Bradley.
Say. Oh dear, I know it so well. Oh, see how those they just go from.
It's okay. You just continue.
Well, anyway, he was the outstanding surgeon here in Madison. And he operated on my brother, and he died right on the table. And my mother said they don't know very much about appendicitis and how to treat. They didn't call it appendicitis. They call it inflammation of the bowels. And he got it from this fall. I told he and his friend went down the historical library, and he fell down on the marble steps. I don't know how many steps. On his side, and then he got this pain, and it was appendicitis, but they didn't call it that. And now they don't think anything of appendicitis. It's just very slight operation, but they didn't know it then. They starved him for 10 days before they operated him. Now they don't think of doing things like that. He was so weak when he was on the table, he just passed out.
Let's go back to your family's connection with the university, starting with your father and your grandfather. How were they connected with the university?
Well, my father isn't connected with the university.
Didn't he? Wasn't he a law? That was your grandfather.
Grandfather.
Grandfather. That's
he was vice president.
Yes.
He came when he was there, a young man, and in the early 20s, just as a, I don't know, I suppose he was a tutor or instructor or something, and he just worked up.
And he became a...
He came from a little town, I think it's Fayette, Wisconsin. And he had 2 sisters, and they went to the university, graduated, and my grandfather did. And then he wanted to be a professor, and he just worked up. And he told me, he taught many things in the beginning. And he taught math, he taught economics, and then he finally went to law. And he was when he retired, he was still teaching international constitutional law, and that's what he did. And the students, and he was vice president when I was in college. Van Hise was president, and my grandfather was vice president, and he was very social. He went to all the proms, just like I did, being the receiving line, and with the president. And my grandmother couldn't do it because it was too much for her to stand and so long and shake hands with everybody. But my grandfather just reveled in it. He loved it. He loved anything like that. And he loved wearing a dress suit. And he was very tall and stately, over 6 feet tall, straight as an arrow, always exercising every day, you know, walking around so many blocks. He did that even up to when he was 90 years old. He used to walk around the 4 blocks where he lived up in the head of Langdon Street. And I went to the prom, and he was almost so tickled to see me when I came down the line, you know, shook hands with everybody. And my junior year, the man that I went with ran for prom chairman. And the man that So I thought I was going to head the march, Grand March, because he was running. But he was defeated by 4 or 5 votes. The man that opposed him was a football fellow. Mm. And of course, my football was, you know, everybody adores all the football people. Well, he beat my man, I think it was 4 or 5 votes. And the man that I went was very popular and very well liked and did a lot of things, but he was not an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
He was an engineer, and he did a lot of things. He ran a lot of things in everything. And he wrote songs, and did a lot of things, you know, so he was well known. I thought he was going to get it, but I lost out. So I was second in line that year. And this is my picture of my prom dress. And
I'm looking at a picture that Miss Parkinson gave me, and it's just
Was in 1913, my junior prom, and that dress was a present to me from a very wealthy woman, a long friend of my mother's in Columbus, and she lived in Denver. She lived in Omaha, Nebraska, and Mother happened to write to her and said that Catherine was going to prom, and she said, "We've got to find a nice dress for her." And she wrote back, "Well, don't," she said, "don't get it, Addie." She said, "I'll pick it out. I'll pick out one and send it to her." Her husband was part owner in a big department store in Omaha, and she went down there and just went through the dresses and picked out this dress and sent it to me. That was a present.
How much would a prom dress have cost back in those days?
I don't know.
Do you have any idea?
Way over $100, so I don't know how much. This was a beaded robe over sat, and it had a train. I never had it. There's only train I ever had on a dress. And it would have been very pretty in the Grand March because it had a long train that I held up, put it the strap over my arm. But it would have been pretty, you know, marching.
I have some more questions about your grandfather, but while we're at the prom, let's talk about what the prom was like. Where was it held, first of all?
Oh, it was in the gymnasium. It was a thing of beauty. Oh, just
gorgeous. This is the armory you're talking
armory.
About?
Armory. The big gym. You couldn't see any of the ironwork, you know, the ceiling, the sides, everything was covered with white bunting and smilax, green smilax, and they imported all this smilax from the south. I don't know where in the south, but they got tons of it. And the students did all the decorating, and they made boxes all along the side of the wall on both sides. And the different fraternities had a box, so after every dance they could go back to their place to sit down in their own particular spot. And then and then up in the front towards the lake was where the reception was. The presidents and my grandfather and some other people, and they were up towards the lake, but on the sides and there was where the boxes were.
And the boxes were the different fraternities and sororities, so you would sit with your.
We'd sit in the box.
In the box that was.
They
yours.
Had the chairs in there, and after every dance we'd go and sit down in a box.
I'd never heard of that before. That's very interesting.
Uh-huh.
And was there a live orchestra there? Of course. A live orchestra, of course.
Oh yes. Yeah. And they always got the best one they could think of. We had many from New York and the big cities in the East. They all came, and they were elegant music. And we danced until 1 o'clock, and we didn't start dancing till about 10 because they didn't come over there until after 9. And then they had the Grand March, and that took some time and all that. And the students did all the decorating. They paid for everything. They paid for the orchestra and paid for all the stuff that they bought, like the smilax and I don't know how they ever did it. And you couldn't see anything but white and green. Couldn't see any of the ironwork, you know, on the ceiling and all. I don't know how they ever did it. And you went to school. I don't know how they could possibly do it, but they did it.
Now, you said a word that I've never heard before. Smilax? Huh? What's smilax?
Oh, it's a little green, it's like a vine almost, you know. It's green, it's no flowers, just green leaves. And I don't know, they just trim it. with that smile. Like, that, I suppose they just bought it, and I don't know how they bought it, in yards or bunches or what. But it was very pretty, and then they'd have it hanging down, you know, all around. I don't know, I can't even remember how they did it, but it was, so it was definitely green and white.
Mm-hmm.
And then the lighting was all fancy. I don't know what the lighting was, but it was very, very pretty. And I don't know, I can't remember what it was, but you didn't see anything but just a bunch of lights, you know. They did it, they must have made something quite, they were quite big, and then lights all around. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether if they made it or what. And then where was the orchestra? I was just trying to think. Well, they must, I don't know whether, I think the orchestra was in the rear, in the balcony. I think, because they weren't on the ground floor. That was all spectators on the ground. But the balcony was in the back, and so I think that's where it was, a big orchestra. And they had a very fine orchestra from New York, usually. And I don't know what it cost them, I have any idea. But they had it for years. Of course, now they haven't had it. They don't use the universe. They don't use the gym, I guess, too much now. But they had the military ball there. That was a big dance, and the prom was a big dance. They danced so much when I was in school, and now they don't dance at all. They don't have any military balls. They don't have any proms. All they do, I think, is go to taverns and drink. We didn't do that.
Well, you know, the
it's changed.
The gymnasium in the Red Gym is right next door to my office, so I...
What?
The gymnasium in the Red Gym is right next door to my office, so I...
Oh, is
yes,
it?
I'll think of what it must have looked like next time.
Oh,
I...
Oh, yeah.
Next time. Now, when did they switch to the Capitol for proms?
Just one. That's all we had was, I remember, one prom. We had it for years, but I can't tell you what it was. It was after I graduated, and I know I went, and... They had, somebody suggested, why not, it was just after it was built and was new and finished. They said, well, I wonder if they'll ever have one there. And first thing I knew, they were going to have the next prom up there. And as I remember, the legislators didn't like it. They didn't want it, but they let them have it. But I don't think they ever had but one up there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like it. I didn't enjoy it half as much as the gym.
Why didn't you like it as much?
Oh, it was cold and dancing on marble floor. I don't know. It wasn't. I didn't like it. I like it better on a wooden floor. And the music wasn't as good, and it was hard to find people. You got lost. They'd be down in the different, you know, so many places where you'd have to go to find your partner and everything. I don't know. I didn't like it. And all you could do is just dance around in the center.
Mm-hmm.
And that was on the marble floor.
And that was in the rotunda there.
Huh?
That was in the rotunda there. The rotunda area.
The first floor.
It's very interesting. How did you...
And I didn't like the man I went with either. And I didn't know him. And that was a very funny thing. I got this call from this man. And, oh, he was much older than I was. I think he was in the 40s, and I was in the 20s. And he called me. He was a sister. He was a brother-in-law of a very good sorority sister of mine. I was a Kappa, mm-hmm. Kappa Kappa Gamma. And our house was on right across from the Chadbourne Hall. We were there many, many years, and that's where. Well, I've forgotten when it was we built up there on Langdon Street, the corner of Langdon and North Henry. I think it was in the 40s or 50s.
So but you used to be where the Humanities Building is now. Okay.
Right across from Ladies Hall.
Right.
And that's where I was. And this man's sister-in-law was a Kappa, and she was one of my very best friends. And I used to stay there Saturday nights after a dance. She'd always say, well, don't go home tonight. Come on over and stay with me. So So I did that a great deal, and I was very fond of her. And this was her husband's brother. And I don't know whether I'd ever met him or not. Maybe I had, but I don't remember. Because she had a house party one summer, invited some Kappas up there, and I probably did meet him up there. But anyway, I never had gone with him or anything. And he telephoned me from Oshkosh. No, he didn't. He telephoned me from Madison. He was in the legislature. He was down here, and he was in the legislature, and he got the idea that, oh, I guess he'd like to go to prom there. This was the first time. And I suppose Nina probably even said to him, oh, why don't you ask my friend? Or something like that, maybe. So he called me, and I was stunned because I'd never been with him or knew him or anything, but I'm sure she must have told him to call me. I was there. I wasn't in New York or anything. I did go down to New York for 3 years, but I was home. So he called me, and I was just stunned.
Okay.
So I went, but he was a disappointment. I didn't like him at all. And so I didn't have a good time, and I never saw him again. And I didn't want to tell his sister-in-law, Nina, my friend, but she knew I didn't like him. But I found out later that women didn't like him. He was attractive, but he didn't know how to treat a woman. And he had gone with many nice people in Oshkosh, and none of them would marry him. He had a beautiful home on the lake there. What is it? What's the lake? Is it Michigan? In Oshkosh?
Winnebago.
He's a well-to-do, has a beautiful home and beautifully run and everything. But women, not any of the Oshkosh women that he went with would marry him. So there must be something wrong with him. And I didn't like him, and none of the women. So he's never married, and he's wealthy and good-looking and has a beautiful home and everything else, but he has a funny way with women.
Getting back to Madison, the city...
So that's the last I ever saw him.
The campus itself, when you went to these proms and when you walked around it, now we take it for granted with our sidewalks and our streets and everything. What was it like? What kind of sidewalks did you have when you were on campus? What were the streets like? Were there street lights? How was that
there
set up?
There were street lights.
Was it the carbon, the ones that lamplighters would lamp or a light?
Yeah, we had some of those. We had them on Langdon Street, I think, too. Which I remember at the corner by our house, there was some kind of a light up there. But I don't know, can't remember. But I think they did. I don't remember what it was, but I remember at the head of Langdon and North Henry, I think they had a light. Maybe at every corner they had a big light. On Langdon Street anyway, because that was a very popular street, always. So many students, you know, and they're out late at night and everything like that, coming home. But I can't remember the light, but I think there was something up there.
Were the sidewalks made of wooden planks, or were they cement at that point? Do you recall?
Well, I know we had a lot of wooden sidewalks, because after every game, football game, they'd have a big bonfire on the lower campus, and it would be privies, wooden privies and sidewalks. Would be piled up and piled up till it would be way up. And finally the bonfire would be so high that the fire department complained, and they were afraid that it might get out of control and they'd have a big fire. So then it was discontinued. But they did that whenever they won a game or had a victory, they'd have a big bonfire, especially if it was an important game. And they'd go and pick up old sidewalks in neighborhoods where they had wooden sidewalks and pick them up, tear them up and bring them down there and burn them up in these privies. You see a privy with you up on top of
Whose privies did they take?
I don't know. They got them down little Italy. We used to call it little Italy. I can't say it. And there were a lot of poor people down there. Wooden sidewalks and privies and everything. Southside Madison. But there weren't any wooden, I don't think there were any, many wooden ones up on Langdon Street. I think we had some, but I think they're mostly cement. I know we had cement. I don't remember any wooden sidewalk in front of our house.
Now, I've seen several pictures of Van Hise when he's on a horse.
Yes.
Do you remember him on a horse?
I never remember him on a horse, but I know I remember what he looked like, and I knew his three daughters. They were Kappas. Janet, Alice, and Hilda. They were three daughters, and they were all Kappas, and I knew Mrs. Van Hise. I don't know Mr. Van Hise, but I'd met him. And when I was initiated, the day before I was initiated to Kappa, they sent each girl, there were about 12 of us, I guess, that time, initiation, and each one was sent to a different Kappa home. And I was sent to the Van Hise home, and I was told to be taken up on the third floor, and I was to be alone. For the day before, for 2 days. I was taken over there like on Thursday, and then they were going to come and get me on Friday, they told me. Mm-hmm. But I think I was there just the 2 days. And Mrs. Van Hise came up, and I was to be alone, and they said, don't entertain her or anything. She's just supposed to be over there and hit the books. I study. Mrs. Van Hise came up to see me, and she brought me food. I know she brought me coffee and donuts, and I don't know what else. She felt sorry for me, because I was stuck up on the third floor all by myself, didn't she? I remember she was so nice, and she sat down and talked to me and brought me food. Oh, she said, you poor thing, you're up here all by yourself. And then the next day they came and blindfolded me and brought me back to the Kappa house. I wasn't there 2 days, but they told me I was going to be there 2 days, and I should bring all my books over and study. And so they came and got me, blindfolded me, took me back to the Kappa house, and and then they had us, we had to perform and do stunts for them Friday night, and the next Saturday we were initiated.
You mean like singing and dancing and things like that?
Crazy things. Yeah. You know, acting or sing a song or do something, you know.
What made you want to join Kappas?
Because we've had so many Kappas in my family. Yeah. My mother's sisters and cousins and relatives were all Kappas in college. I think I had I know right now we have over a dozen. They've got grandchildren and nieces that are Kappas. I've got three in Milwaukee now. And she's one daughter, niece has two daughters, and they're going here. They'll probably be Kappas. Mm-hmm. So we've had this long string. I bet we've got at least 20 Kappas in our family. Mm-hmm. And he didn't dare go and do anything else. Delta Gamma was our rival.
What did you do for that rivalry? I mean, how was it a rivalry?
Well, we were good friends, very good friends. I had some very good friends. Mrs. K right here is a Delta Gamma. Uh-huh. She's my best friend here in town. Uh-huh. She never mentions Delta Gamma. I don't know whether she was very happy there or not. I've never asked her, but she never, never speaks about it. Hmm.
So you lived in the Kappa house then?
No, I never lived there. Okay. I lived at home, but I ate a lot of meals there. I knew the cook and the chaperone and a lot of girls over there, and I stayed there lots of times after parties and things like that. But I never lived there.
How many girls did live there, about? Is it a houseful, pretty much?
They added on a few years ago, about 10 or 15 years ago, they added on another dining room. They got two dining rooms now because they had so many people in the chapter. They had over 50 in the chapter. And I don't know how many now they have, but it must be, oh, it's a big chapter. They used to have 25 and then they got up to about 50, I think. And they had to, they built it up in the second and third floor, so they have bedrooms and second, extra ones on the second and third floor and an extra dining room. But I don't know. All the girls of the house, of course, board there and live there. But and sometimes a girl will come in and there'll be a vacancy. She gets sick or has to quit or something, and there'll be a vacancy and a girl will move in. But they can't all live. And a freshman can't live in the house. Mm-hmm. So it has to be just an upperclassman. And well, I guess sophomores can live in there. But I don't know how many, because I haven't been down there for so long. I don't even know the chaperone now. They have a very good one with it. We've had some that were excellent, and we've had some that weren't so good.
Now, when you were a Kappa, you had a chaperone, and yeah. it was a woman. Was it an older woman, I would assume?
Widow.
Widow. And what would her job be?
She took care of all the money that came in, paid all the bills, paid the help, paid the grocery bills and everything like that. And I don't know about the, she didn't do the taxes, but she had to keep track of everything. And she had her rules, and we had house rules, and if they came late, well, I don't know what I don't know what she did to them, but.
So she was sort of in charge of house discipline, too.
Oh, yes.
Did it vary from house to house as to what the rules were? Do you remember that?
Oh.
Or was it pretty much standard?
Oh, pretty much standard. You had to be in on a certain time, yeah. Like 12 o'clock at night. You had to be home, I guess, by maybe it was 12:30, maybe it was 1, I don't know. But there were certain hours. Mm-hmm. They gave you so much time to come home.
Now,
you know, from these dances, fraternity dances, you know. They couldn't go out and drink or do anything like that. Or they had to come home or the door was locked.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get in.
And the chaperone lived in the house?
She lived on the ground floor, first floor.
So you couldn't get by her without...
She'd have to open the door and let them in because the door would be locked. Of course, each girl had a key,
yeah.
So she could come in, you know, but... They were supposed to be in by 1 o'clock. I'm sure it was 1 o'clock. I don't think it was later than that. And she never could. Friday and Saturday nights, she had to. She usually sat up, you know, not always, but she'd be undressed and all ready to hop into bed. But I meant she would be up until she knew all the girls were mm-hmm. in. And if they weren't in, why, they got it the next day from her. So I don't know what they did.
Now, when a gentleman came to pick up a date, did they have a parlor or anything for people to sit down in and entertain?
Sure. They had a great big, huge living room. Sometimes they went in there, and then we had a hall that had two settees, two couches or settees, like, you know, where they could sit down in the hall. Or go in the chapter room, and they have two couches in there and lots of chairs. They'd go in either the hall or there.
What's a chapter room? What is a chapter room? Is that where you hold meetings?
Living room.
Okay. And you had a cook also, a full-time cook?
We had a full-time cook and a second maid. Who, I think they had two maids and a cook. And we had student men help. They were the waiters, mm-hmm. waited on table, and they got their meals for nothing.
So these men would wait while...
They had at least three or four. Now they got two dining rooms, so I don't know how many they have now.
Were dinners fairly formal there? Would you dress, you wouldn't come in... You wouldn't come in blue jeans to them, or right? I mean,
you had to be. They wouldn't allow it even for breakfast, I don't think.
So it was.
They had to be dressed.
What about stuff like prayers? Were prayers given at these, do you recall?
No. They used to say, they had a Kappa song they always sang before they ate. Like, that was, it wasn't a hymn, but it was a little short thing that, you know, they always sang it before they
ate. Can you remember it? No, I wanted to get you to sing it.
I can't even remember the tune. But I remember that they only sang it for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't sing it for breakfast because people came different times to breakfast. Mm-hmm. They'd come at, well, I don't know how early they started, but they must have started at 7 or 7. Because a lot of them had 8 o'clocks, you know. Mm-hmm. So they'd have to have an early breakfast. And then some, and they had hours like 7 to 9 for breakfast. And they had a certain, you know, time because mm-hmm. they couldn't be dragging in, you know, and the cook. When she's getting ready to get dinner, she didn't want to be serving breakfast. So they had a time limit for every meal, you know. And the men had to get back to classes, too. They couldn't stick around either. And they wiped dishes, washed dishes and wiped dishes. And boy, they did in a hurry, too. Because a lot of them had, they tried to arrange it so they didn't have to leave, you know, early, because I don't think they were paid, if I remember right. I think they got their meal, and that's all.
Mm-hmm.
And they were glad to get their meals,
because
mm-hmm. they had very good meals.
I was going to say, was the food pretty good?
Oh, yes. They had always had a good cook, and they had good meals. Salad and dessert and meat and fresh rolls lots of times. And I think their meals were very good. I never heard people complain.
Now, you've talked about your sorority house, and you've talked about your music classes. What about other classes that you took? Were there any professors or any classes that you remember as being particularly interesting, influential, whatever?
Oh, some of them I thought were bores.
Well, that's to be expected.
But I remember some of the professors. Carl Russell Fish, he always wore a red vest. And they gave him a skyrocket before. He was a lecturer in American history. And he wouldn't begin until he got this skyrocket. And oh, they gave him a skyrocket. And he'd open up his coat and show his red vest, you know. Oh, he was a card. He was an actor. They liked him, though. He just loved it. And then Professor Snow was very popular. He was physics. And he made snowflakes. One lecture, he made snowflakes, and he threw them in the air to the students. I'll never forget that. He was good. He was very good, very well liked. Those two were outstanding. And then we had several that were, they talked about him a lot, but they weren't so popular. But there was a Professor O'Shea, and he taught, he taught, how to bring up children or something. I don't know what. And he had the worst children in town. They had no manners at all, yet he let them do what they wanted to do at the table. If they had a company, they'd take up a bun and throw the bun at the guest or something. And everybody would talk about him. He said, well, he'd better not talk, preach the way he does, because he said he had the worst acting kids in town. But they all turned out all right.
Michael Vincent, though,
he didn't. He didn't believe in saying no to him. He said, I know different people that were invited over there for a meal. That they would tell me how terrible the kids were. I don't know whether that was true about the bun, but that always stuck with me. I don't know whether it was so or not. And they did terrible things. Not the oldest girl. The oldest girl turned out to be a professor. I think English professor down at Indiana University, and she never married, and she taught, and I don't know whether she's still alive or not. She probably isn't. But she was a very successful teacher. The boys, I don't know, Vincent went to New York. I don't know what he did, but I guess he turned out all right. And then there was another one, but he was a holy terror. But I, as far as I know, I guess they turned out all right. I don't know. And they lived on Langdon up in the next block. Well, there were only two, three doors from the Kappa House on Langdon. And then he gave up that house and built a house down by the lake, up in the next block down by the lake. And that's where they lived after the children were married and gone. And I guess he was still teaching, I don't know. But he was well known. And then there's a psychology professor there was. He was good too. I can't say his name, Darren. But he was very popular. And we had a couple history professors that were very good too.
Was Jastrow the psychologist?
Psychologist, and he lived just 3-4 houses from my house on Langdon. And I knew Mrs. Jastrow, and they hadn't any children, and she wanted a child. She adopted a little Jewish boy. Oh, she was so crazy about him. I don't know how whether he ever lived to grow up or not, but they both died, and she'd go by with this little boy. He was 3 or 4 years old when I saw him. And the house that the Jastrows lived in is still on Langdon Street. It's never been torn down. Apartment building. And they had a top apartment. They lived there. Well, all the time I lived on Langdon Street, the Jastrows lived in that apartment. Mrs. Jastrow, and then they got this little boy, but they still live there. And I don't know which one died first, Mrs. or Mr., but it seems to me it was Mrs. that died first, and then I guess Mr. I don't know whether Mr. Jastrow went to some other place to teach or whether he gave up. I don't remember that name. I didn't know him that well. I knew to speak to him. And Mrs. Jastrow knew my mother. She's a very pleasant woman. Very.
Now you said there were some other history professors. Was George Clark Celery one of them by any chance?
Celery? Professor Celery, isn't that one?
Yeah.
Monroe, Professor Monroe.
Can you tell me anything about Celery or Monroe?
I didn't take it.
There's another very famous professor, some might say infamous, who was around when you were a student, and that was William Ellery Leonard
from
the English department.
He was a freak. Oh, I hated him. Everybody thought he was a nut. And he'd go prancing up State Street or Langdon Street and with his first wife and his second wife and I guess his third wife, and he'd get a young girl, and oh, I don't know. He was a nut. And everybody talked about him. He acted like he was insane sometimes, but I don't know how in the world he ever taught. But he divorced his first wife, and then he married somebody else, and a young girl, and then he came back, and the first wife came back to him, and oh, I don't know, it was all mixed up.
Now I've heard,
but he was crazy. I know the way he walked down State Street, and he made his wife walk back of him, and I don't know, never. I don't know. He did everything different. I think he was a little bit off. And then he married Professor Freeman's daughter, and there was insanity in her family. And she never was really insane, but she married this Ellery Leonard, and everybody said, what in the world did she ever marry him? She had a nice home right across the street from our house, and her father was a professor. You see, what was it? Professor Freeman, I don't know. English, I guess. I don't know. Well, anyway, he had these two daughters. Both married professors. One married Max Mason, Professor Max Mason. I think he was a math.
Mm-hmm. Physics.
And he left Madison and went to Chicago University as president. But he didn't stay there very long. And he married again, divorced his wife, married again, and I think he went to New York, and I don't know what he did there. And then Charlotte married this crazy Leonard, and he treated her just terrible. Wouldn't let her wear clothes, decent clothes, and made her wear certain things that he liked, and oh, and she, well, he drew her, he just made her insane because he pestered her all the time and corrected her all the time and didn't approve of anything she did, and I think she couldn't stand it. And she'd go to the window and open the window and talk to the lady that lived next door, Mrs. Allen. Mrs. Allen was an elderly woman. She had a daughter that was taught at the university. I've forgotten what it was, Latin or English, I don't know it. And she'd go to the door and call to Mrs. Allen, and she'd say, oh, Mrs. Allen, I'm so unhappy. She said, I can't stand it any longer. And she told her she was going to commit suicide, and she did. They found her in the lake one day, up to her neck in water, but they got her before she committed suicide in the lake. And they got her home, but she committed suicide at home there. She said she couldn't stand living with Ellery Leonard any longer. He was terrible. I don't know whether her father should have kicked him out long ago. But she committed suicide and killed herself.
There's another professor who was well known on campus. I wonder if you had any courses from him or knew of him, and that's Max Otto.
Oh yeah, he was well liked.
Yeah.
He was psychology.
Philosophy, Latin, I think.
Philosophy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was well liked. But Leonard, oh, I don't know. I can just see him walking up State Street. He had him loping along with his cane, and then his wife would be, I don't know how many feet in back of him. I don't know, he was crazy. But of course we were against him because he didn't treat Charlotte Freeman nice. And she was a lovely lady. There was, her mother, I guess, went insane and lived a good many years in, I guess, an insane asylum. That's what I was told. I don't know, I never knew her. But so there was, she had that strain in her, but if people had treated her nice, she'd be all right. She'd come over to my mother and sit on the front porch with my mother and talk to her, and she'd say, oh, Mrs. Parkinson, what's the secret of happiness? She says, I haven't known any happiness since I was married. She'd tell my mother that. My mother felt very sorry for her. Her father didn't do anything. He was a teacher. Just let her go. Didn't pay any attention to her. She must have done the cooking for him. But I don't know whether because he was English and taught English and Ellery taught English, maybe he just thought he was all right. I don't know. But mother thought it was terrible. She was very, very unhappy. But her sister married Max Mason, a math professor. And she didn't live in Madison, but she married and had several children. And then when she got to be a little bit old, why, he divorced her and married another one, younger one. So both of them ended in tragedies.
Oh, geez. Now, Max Mason...
And they were, mother said when she came to Madison and they built the house on Langdon Street, the two Freeman girls, Charlotte and Mary, I think her sister was, she said, were two of the prettiest young girls in Madison. And they were in college, and she said, they had bows galore, she said, for near every Friday or Saturday night, it'd be a beautiful car, not a horse and buggy, horse and buggies then, not so many cars, waiting to take them out for a drive and out for dinner. They were popular, they had all kinds of men, and then they both of them ended up this way. They didn't. Well, Mary married Max Mason, of course. He was a nice man for a good many years. And Mary was a beautiful blonde, and another one was a brunette. And then she said they were two of the prettiest, most popular girls She said, up in our neighborhood. And she said, and I think in Madison. She said, I remember every weekend it'd be sometimes a team of horses. It would go off in a beautiful car, you know, not an electric car, but a horse and buggy, you know. Out for dinner. I think a beautiful street years ago, they had elm trees that arched. The pretty the R block was just nothing. And now I think the last time I was up there, I couldn't see any trees at all. I don't know whether they're all dead or what.
Yeah, I think the elm trees got zapped in the Dutch elm disease thing, and they haven't really replanted.
I don't remember any trees. Yeah. These means despair. It was beautiful.
We're talking about Langdon Street. We missed that. Yeah.
And it was, as I remember, the chat was that my mother said it was one of the prettiest streets in town. There were lovely homes there. A lot of the homes are torn down, and fraternities are built where the beautiful homes were. But it was, I thought, a beautiful street, and only one block from the lake, you know. Brittingham home was down just one block on North Henry down the lake. Mr. Brittingham was a millionaire lumberman, and later he sold his house and he built out on the west side way out. And I think now, then the children, after the parents died, the children sold the house. Gave it to the university, and I think the vice president or the president lives in the Brittingham home. Mm-hmm. I don't know which. I know they gave it to the university.
I think the president of the system lives there now.
Well, that's it.
University system.
That was the Brittingham home.
Let's get back a little bit to your grandfather, and you were telling me the other day about his house
My grandfather's house was on the corner of Murray Street and State Street, across from the lower campus and directly across from the lower campus and the what's that building there?
The Historical Society?
Huh?
The Historical Society?
And he lived there his whole life, his whole years that he taught. He came, well, I don't know when he built it, but all the children were born there. So he must have lived there his whole life, and he taught until he was 75. And he lived to be 92, and he sold the house after a fire. He had a very bad fire in the winter time, and I think it was he was 75 years old. Overheated furnace. It was a three-story house, and he had rooms that he rented on the third floor to students. There were three women that lived on the third floor that married three of his sons. Mm. And they boarded and roomed at the house there, and they married three of his sons. And he had a lot of bedrooms on the second floor and third floor, and a big basement. And I used to think it was a huge house. He had a large library, had a big reception room on the other side where my grandmother used to have teas and receptions for the university women. Big grand piano and a beautiful fireplace. It was a lovely room. It was all on one side, on the Murray Street side. And then on the other side, towards the university, was his library. Then he had a living room next to that, and a big dining room and a big kitchen. And they had 12 at the dining room table every day. And she had help. She didn't do any cooking. She couldn't. But she had all her family, and then she had these few, two or three women that lived on the top floor that liked, were going with her, three of her sons. And they let those three eat there too. So they ate there and lived there. And they married the three sons. And they always liked them very much. I don't know whether she had more help than one. I don't know. I don't remember that, but she had somebody wait on table, and I don't know how in the world she could do all she did and plan the meal. And once in a while, she'd go out and she'd make about four or five pies or something like that, special occasion. But they had very good meals and nicely served and everything like that. All those years and bringing up 8 children, and one daughter was a cripple. She had difficulty walking. She couldn't hardly talk. Her talking and her walking, and she couldn't write. And she's the only one that didn't go to college because they couldn't get her up the hill, or she would have. Her mind was fine, but as I remember it, Mother said she was dropped at birth, and she was terribly handicapped, but her mind was fine, and he was always looking out for her. That was Harriet, but she was always around there, and my grandmother was always looking after her, seeing that she was being taken care of properly and everything. And then with all this big house and all these people eating there and sleeping there, I don't know how in the world, and entertaining. And my grandfather wanted her to do these things. She did as much as she could, but I don't know. I don't know how in the world she ever did it. But she was. She was on president of some, I wish I could remember what she was president of, some women's organization. Well, anyway, they had a terrible fire in the wintertime, and the overheated furnace in the dead of winter when it was way in the zeros, and the house was filled with smoke that barely got my grandmother out. She was upstairs early in the morning. It barely got her down the stairs, and outside her she would have been dead. And they got all the people on the third floor out and the second floor. And the floor caved in, and the room, the big reception room where they had the grand piano. One leg was burnt off of the grand piano, but the rest of the piano was all right. The floor went down in the hall, and then in the dining room, and she had all her beautiful china and dishes and shelves all around there. The firemen took them, threw them out the window, broke everything. She lost everything in the dining room. Everything was thrown out the window. And, oh, it was a terrible thing. And then he had his, they saved his desk. He had a desk and he had it all covered with books and papers, and he'd given an exam the day before, and the papers were on the desk. They got burnt. And I think there were 2 or 3 of them that didn't get burnt. And so he said to me, I said, well, you aren't going to flunk anybody, are you? And he said, I should say not. He said, they saved my whole law library. The fireman threw out his law books out the window, and they had made a human chain. A long chain of there's a fraternity next door, and these boys saw a great deal of my grandfather. They used to give him skyrockets every once in a while. And they made a human chain, and the firemen threw these law books out, and each one would throw it and give it to the next one. And they saved his law library, and he was so grateful for that. He said, I wouldn't flunk any of them. He told me that. I said, are you going to flunk any of the boys? Because you've got some of the papers written, corrected, and some that. He said, I'm not going to flunk anybody. And he said, I'll just give another examination. But they were wonderful to him, and he was so grateful. So he got his desk, and when they moved his desk and all his law books up to his new house, which was the head of Langdon Street next to Kennedy Manor on Wisconsin Avenue. And he had all that stuff up there in his bedroom up there. And he saved a black leather couch that was in the library. They saved that, and his desk and his law books. So he was lucky. But that was one of the things I remember him that, and I remember telling me about the exam, you know, and how wonderful the boys were, and saving his books. Oh, they thought a lot of them, I think, and they were right next door.
Now, what happened to the land that the house...
And so he said after that, he said, well, I think I'm going to sell the house. And he said, I want the university to have it. He said, it's only one block from the university there, the ones that should have it, not anybody else. And he lived there all his, well, I think all his teaching years. All his family were born there, everything. So he said, he told him, and he gave him a very good price. My father didn't like it because he said he didn't charge him enough. He said, it was a big house. But of course they used it and fixed it up a little bit for a while, but then they tore it down and built a new one. And then I think, I can't remember whether the apartment on Murray Street right next to it, whether he built it or the university built it. And a lot of the students and professors, assistant professors lived in there. And then they boarded over at his house. They lived next door and they came over and boarded there. So, and they're still there. Now, I guess it's too small now. I don't know whether they'll ever tear it down, build another one or not, but I understand it's too small. But he gave him a very good price and he was glad to get rid of it. And then with that money, why, he bought this house up there on Wisconsin Avenue, and which wasn't big at all, but it was big enough. And then one of his sons and his wife, she lived in the old house before she was married. She was one of the women that married one of his sons. That was Ben. So Ben and his wife took care of him, and they moved in and ran the house for my grandfather, because he was up in the 90s then. Well, he lived to be 92. He wasn't in the 90s then, but he had retired at 75, so he lived up there for quite a while. My grandmother died just a couple of years after they moved up there. But he lived on, and he couldn't have lived there if it hadn't been for his son and his wife. They ran the house, and then there were the crippled daughter came and lived there. And then my Uncle Ben had two children, and they lived there and went to college, a daughter and a son. So now, of course, it's all over with. They're all dead now, my aunt and uncle. And the daughter, Ben's daughter, lives in Denver, Colorado, and she is 89, I think. She was my sister's age. She's living. And she out there, and she has just one child, and the child lives upstairs and she lives downstairs. And then there was a son, and I think he died. And I don't know who the man is that owns the house now, but my father, after my grandfather passed away, and of course Ben and Westbrook got out because they didn't own the house, and they knew that my father was going to sell it. So my father was in the lumber business, and he added on another room and downstairs for extra bedroom and two more upstairs. And then they sold the house, and it's now a rooming house, and it's filled all the time. I don't know who the man is. Some Madison man bought it.
Let's talk about your grandfather. I looked up dates on him today in terms of when he was at the university and when he got his degrees. And his name is John Barber Parkinson.
That's right.
And he got his AB degree at UW in 1860.
1860.
And he got his AM degree. That must be his law degree. I don't know the terms from that period. From UW in 1863. So we're talking about a man who graduated from the university and attended the university during the Civil War. So yeah. We're going back quite a ways. Do you remember him telling you about any particular people or any particular events or the Civil War, you know, those any of those types of things at all?
No, not at all.
Because when I saw those dates, I just about fell out of my chair this morning looking at them, because my goodness, 1860 is quite a ways ago.
No, I don't remember any of that. I must have been very small.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's no reason why you should. I just thought maybe that he had mentioned things. But he was here. Now, when did he get appointed vice? Who appointed him vice president?
I don't know. But Van Hise was president.
Mm-hmm. So it would probably have been Van Hise. What did he say? How did he get along with Van Hise?
He always got along with everybody. He was popular. Students liked him, and I think this. Let me show you a few things that I've got, maybe.
Okay, let me put this on pause here. Ms. Parkinson has just given me a copy of something the university presented to her grandfather upon his retirement. And I'd like to read it for the record here. It says, "Greetings from the faculty of the University of Wisconsin. Save for two brief intervals, John Barber Parkinson has for half a century served the University of Wisconsin either as a regent or as a member of its faculty, and for the past 26 years has been its vice president."
Yeah, 26 years he was vice president.
"When the university, when he joined its instructional staff in the opening year of the Civil War, the university was in its infancy and struggling for an uncertain existence. He has witnessed and contributed to its development from that day until this. His capacity as a teacher, his sterling character, and his effective leadership of men have been valuable assets of this institution, for they have greatly endeared him to thousands of Wisconsin students and made him a marked figure among the citizens of our Commonwealth. Throughout his 50 years of virile activity upon this campus and at this Capitol, Professor Parkinson's home has been blessed by a wife who has abundantly cooperated with him in the important duties and responsibilities of his position. Her charm of manner, her grateful hospitality, her kindly solicitude for the welfare of others have been ever-present social factors in university life at Wisconsin. Upon the occasion of the golden wedding anniversary of Professor and Mrs. Parkinson, the faculty of the University of Wisconsin unanimously tendered to them this heartfelt expression of veneration and love, and cordially wish them many years of life, happiness, and public usefulness. Madison, Wisconsin, December the 19th, 1911. Signed by Charles Richard Van Hise, and, I can't read the secretary of the faculty's name here.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's
Van Hise, I know.
Yeah, Richard. Oh, that's a wonderful.
I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I know the one at Aga Hall was nice, and I can't remember a darn thing, so I want you to go over there and copy it down.
Now, tell us about that. We didn't have the tape on before when you were talking about your grandfather and the naming of a... tell us about what happened at Aga Hall, about how a hall was named after your grandfather.
I don't know anything about it, except that they just told me that they were going to name one of the halls for my grandfather, and they wanted me to come over, or they did do it, and they wanted me to come over and have dinner. And so I went with my sister, and so I saw the picture of him. I haven't any young picture of him. I have an older picture here. After he sold the house, and he was past 70, lived there 75 years, and he's 92 years old, and then he's sitting on the front porch in a hammock reading the paper.
Mm-hmm.
That's a new home up there.
Wisconsin? Is that the one across from Kennedy?
Hmm?
Is that the hot one across from Kennedy or next to Kennedy? Apartment?
Next to Kennedy.
Yeah, okay.
And then I think that other one is that my grandmother?
Yes,
grandmother. Yeah, that's my grandmother.
Yeah.
Of course, that was an old picture, but she was the sweetest thing. She was a little woman. She's fat, but she was so good, and he was so tall, very straight, very handsome, white beard, white hair. I never knew him. He always had the white beard and white hair. I don't ever remember anything else. So he must have been white early. But he had he really was very, very nice. I don't know whether there's anything else there.
Let me turn this off for a minute. This is Barry Tyker. We're ending our recording session for the day. Now we will be continuing this interview next week sometime.